Welcome to VOA's International Edition. I'm Susan Yawkey in Washington. Coming up, a look at the meaning behind President Obama's trip to Orlando, Florida. Peek into the U.S. cyber war with ISIS. We hear about taking religion on the road, somewhat like a traveling salesman. And learning from the circus to get into shape.
So whether or not it's aerial arts or contortion or hand balancing, and each segment of the circus arts works on a different portion of their body.
It's all on today's International Edition. U.S. President Barack Obama is in Orlando, Florida today to pay his respects following Sunday's mass shooting at a gay nightclub that left 49 people dead and 53 others wounded. White House correspondent Cindy Sain joined us on the line. Welcome, Cindy.
Thank you, Susan.
Well, the White House is labeling this trip a solemn responsibility.
Yes, that's right. The president has made clear that he is going on behalf of the American people, of the whole country, representing to meet with families, to meet of the victims, to meet with survivors, to meet with doctors, medical personnel, and first responders, all of those who were impacted by this mass shooting on Sunday.
What has the White House said about this, the biggest shooting, mass shooting in the country history?
Yes, that's right. And White House Press Secretary Josh Earnest got emotional during the briefing and said the president feels like he must go. And he also said that the LGBT community was targeted in this. And I think the White House feels a special responsibility because it looks like it being a gay nightclub that was targeted. And they have said that this is a act of terror and an act of hate.
And what is he hoping will be accomplished by his trip there today?
Well, he said he wants to show the people of Orlando that the country stands with them, that members of the LGBT community, that they are not alone, and that the whole country stands in solidarity with them as they seek to recover and to heal after this mass shooting.
Has the president made this sort of outreach before following other national tragedies?
He has, Susan. As a matter of fact, it's almost gotten to be routine. One of the most memorable times was after the shooting in at Sandy Hook in Newtown, Connecticut, when the first and second graders were killed. Seemed to affect the president the most. So he has done this many times before, reaching out and traveling to many parts of the country.
Has there been any talk about financial support for these people?
The president, right after the shooting, directed that the city of Orlando have all the assets and resources that they needed to cope with the investigation and with the aftermath.
Well, thank you very much, Cindy, for speaking with us today from the White House.
My pleasure.
Joining me here in the studio is social media reporter Andrew Palchevsky. And Andrew, what are they saying about this story on the internet today?
Well, everyone is tracking President Obama's trip to Orlando. He's in Orlando to meet with some of the survivors, some of the first responders, some of the doctors, and he's expected to speak later today. So there's a lot of anticipation about what his remarks might bring, what words he might offer as kind of a way to heal and move forward.
And it's interesting who was on that plane with him. I saw the headline about it, but I'll let you explain.
Yeah, well, Air Force One, which is the president's plane, was trending on Twitter, and that's because one of the passengers with President Obama was Florida Senator Marco Rubio. Now, our listeners may remember that name. Marco Rubio was one of the Republicans running for president of the United States, didn't get the Republican Party nomination, but he's of the opposite party of President Obama. Politically, they're opposites. They've kind of tussled on political issues. So people saying it's very nice that Marco Rubio, the Florida senator, even though he's a Republican, even though President Obama is a Democrat, that they're on the plane together, they're flying down on Air Force One. It's a sign of bipartisanship and maybe a good sign of trying to move forward and not highlight differences and hatred and anger, but coming together and cooperation.
And this is all from that mass shooting in Orlando. Also some tragic news out of England.
Yes, a word of a shooting of Jo Cox, who was a Labour member of Parliament. She was shot and stabbed after meeting with some of her constituents, and then she unfortunately died from those injuries. Apparently, reportedly, the man who shot and stabbed her shouted "Britain first." Now, the UK is planning their Brexit vote next week to determine whether they're going to stay in the European Union or leave, so people wondering if this has something to do with that. So there's a lot of questions about that, but something very unusual for the United Kingdom. There aren't a lot of gun crimes there.
No, not at all.
Not nearly as many as there are in the U.S., so it's very unusual. And, of course, people on social media have a heightened sense of that after this Orlando shooting.
And you were mentioning something about Trump and a new hashtag, I guess it is.
Yes. So Donald Trump in a speech said, ask the gays who that will be better for LGBT issues, me or Hillary Clinton. And a number of LGBT people on social media have taken that hashtag and run rampant with it to make jokes at Trump's expense. A lot of GIFs where they're expressing their displeasure with Donald Trump. So a lot of jokes about that. But clearly, Donald Trump hit a nerve with the LGBT community, and they're saying, no, we don't think you're going to be the best person to represent us. We think it's going to be Hillary Clinton. And we think you're absolutely wrong in saying that you are. So a lot of funny jokes under that hashtag, Ask the Gays.
Okay, well, thank you so much, Andrew.
Thank you.
In the news, Obama is offering comfort to a grieving Orlando. UN says Islamic State raped, enslaved, and killed Yazidis in a genocide campaign. A human rights group says Ethiopian security forces have killed more than 400 people since November in a crackdown on protests. Brazil's interim president is linked to one of the country's biggest corruption scandals. The cockpit voice recorder of a crashed Egypt Air jet is found in the Mediterranean. News, feature reports, and more are at voanews.com. This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
Researchers from the LIGO and Virgo scientific collaborations say they have received a second gravitational wave signal with their two detector sites in Louisiana and Washington State. This latest ripple in space-time was detected as it swept over the Earth back on December 26, 2015, 3 months after the first one was received. LIGO Virgo scientists say that this gravitational wave signal was weaker than the first. Like the first detected gravitational wave, this one was also produced in the final moments before two wildly spinning black holes merged as one. It's thought that the wave-producing black hole merger took place about 1.4 billion years ago. They also found that before joining together, the two black holes had masses that were 8 and 14 times greater than the Sun, which is much smaller than what produced the first detected wave. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
The Pentagon has launched several cyber offensive operations against Islamic State militants, which experts say have produced many coalition successes in the last few months. Defense Department correspondent Carla Babb is following that story, and she joins us on the line. Hi, Carla.
Hi, Susan.
What do we know about these programs?
Well, we know that the U.S. Cyber Command has developed this task force. It's called Joint Task Force ARES. That was developed in May, and it's in its initial operation phase now, according to Cyber Command spokesman Joel Holstead. He was speaking to VOA, and he told me that this is basically a way to help accelerate the cyber campaign specifically against the Islamic State. They are bringing together members, both operational military people and cyber and intelligence people, all from the different military branches to be a part of this group. And its primary focus is to create a sustained cyberspace campaign against the Islamic State.
What do they hope to accomplish?
There have been some successes, and they're hoping to make this cleaner, to make this more accelerated. I was talking to some experts who would tell me that some of the cyber campaigns have penetrated some of the emails, or that he didn't want to get specific, but they've penetrated and caused some commanders to go to the wrong places in the battlefield, for example, getting them the wrong message. There's been other times where I was talking to somebody over in Baghdad, Colonel Chris Garver, and he was saying that sometimes the United States chooses not to launch a cyber attack to get rid of something. Say they're following a jihadist website. They monitor it, and they try to link to the emails or the people who are a part of it and or try to mess with it instead of initially taking it out. Because as soon as you launch a cyber attack, you lose that intel. So there is a process, according to Cyber Command, they do have a process to kind of figure out when do we launch an attack and when do we use this for intelligence.
And when they gather the intelligence, I know you can't give me specifics, but what type of things do they use this for?
So they can use these attacks to locate where people are sending emails, for example. Some of the ways that Islamic State communicates on the battlefield is through email or through internet applications. So if they can tap into that, they can locate where they are. As I mentioned before, they can try to infiltrate and send messages on behalf of people that aren't really messages on behalf of people. It varies from time to time. So just as they would disrupt a radio or a cell phone tower, the cyber works the same way. It can really mess up their command and control, really mess up their communications, and throw off Islamic State so that they are kind of lost on the battlefield.
Is there any cyber offensive coming from Islamic State against the U.S.? Do we know?
Well, we do know that there have been some attacks tried. It's a constant. I mean, the Pentagon is being hacked all the time. They don't always get in, but people are out there trying. There was just this week, actually, an Islamic State-linked hacker that pled guilty to providing material support to the Islamic State. His name was Ardit Farizi. He was actually a citizen of Kosovo, and he pled guilty right here in the United States for trying to hack in and get information on military leaders and members of the military to try to send to the Islamic State. So it's a battle back and forth, and it's an interesting new battle because the Pentagon has never had to deal with it in the way that it has in this era and this fight against the Islamic State.
Well, thanks, Carla, for talking with us today from the Pentagon.
Thank you for having me.
Coming up on International Edition, spreading religion small town style and getting that circus body. Early American pioneers like Daniel Boone and Davy Crockett were not the only adventurers to brave the wilds of North America. Protestant Christianity spread westward across the frontier, thanks in large measure to the tireless efforts of so-called circuit-riding preachers. Lay pastors, in many instances, they traveled by horseback to conduct church services for small towns and isolated pioneer outposts. Reporter Mike Osborne recently discovered that a new generation of circuit-riding ministers is once again traveling America's highways and byways.
It's Sunday morning, and Pastor Dan Sweet is leading services at tiny Zions Hill United Methodist Church in Unionville, Tennessee. He's one of a growing number of lay pastors serving Methodist churches, primarily in small rural congregations just like Zions Hill. During the week, Sweet works as the director of contracts for a large engineering firm specializing in government projects. He says both of his jobs are full-time positions.
I do this job 7 days a week. The other job is five. The other job pays a whole lot better, and it pays the bills. This is more a labor of love, and it's a labor of what God has asked me to do.
Barbara Watterson has been attending Zions Hill Church for most of the last 60 years. She's now one of just about 20 or so people still attending the 150-year-old congregation.
And I'm just a small church person. I love big churches, but I just love the fellowship of the small churches. Everybody's just a loving, spiritual family, and everybody gets along.
As soon as services are over at Zions Hill, Pastor Sweet jumps into his Jeep and rushes 10 minutes across country to another small church where he conducts his second service of the morning.
Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us.
According to the prestigious Pew Research Center, the number of Americans who attend church services on a regular basis has been slowly declining for some time. The trend is especially pronounced in the nation's older, more traditional, so-called mainline Protestant churches. Duke University sociologist Mark Chavis researches faith trends in the U.S. He says other Christian denominations should be watching the Methodist experience for lessons on what they'll likely face in the years to come.
What's interesting is that lately, evangelical churches, big evangelical denominations like Southern Baptist, for example, have started to show signs of decline as well. So what'll be interesting to watch in the next period of time is whether the evangelical patterns start to look like what the mainline patterns have looked like, just delayed by a couple of decades.
Pastor Sweet acknowledges that unless his small churches can attract some new members, they may eventually be forced to close their doors, but he remains optimistic.
I've only been facing it with them for about 2 years now. They've been facing it for quite a while, a longer while, and God always seems to bring in new people.
Sweet is familiar with the Methodist history of circuit-riding pioneer preachers. He says he's served more than two churches before and would be willing to do so again. But he'd really prefer to stick with four-wheeled transportation.
You won't find me on a horseback riding around with a satchel, but I'll get in the Jeep and I'll go to the churches, and I think it's awesome. I really, truly do.
United Methodist Church, headquartered in Nashville, Tennessee, wasn't able to tell VOA just how many lay pastors currently serve its congregations, but does say the number is growing.
Amen.
For VOA News, I'm Mike Osborne in Unionville, Tennessee.
This is VOA.
From science and technology, here's what's new.
Researchers in Poland say they've created a new prosthetic heart composed of a variety of innovative materials, including graphene and polymers. These materials aren't only inexpensive, they're sturdy and durable. And that, says Professor Mirosława Elfrey, means these life-saving prosthetics will last longer.
This is an innovative material that is much more durable than those that are currently used. The graphene improves maintenance of oxygen in the patient's body.
The prosthesis supports a patient's heart while waiting for a transplant, and often is the only way to keep patients alive while they wait for surgery. But don't look for these anytime soon. The researchers say they need about $2.5 million for further testing. For What's New, I'm Doug Bernard.
A new fitness craze has people using skills used by circus performers to get in shape. As International Edition's David Byrd tells us, the LA Cirque School combines a tough workout with fun and flexibility.
When you go to the gym, you're used to seeing certain pieces of equipment, weight plates, a treadmill, a stair climber, maybe even a boxing bag. But a trapeze or a high wire? But that's exactly what you will find at Cirque School LA, which combines professional circus training and Pilates to give participants a great workout and teach them new skills. The school was founded by former Cirque du Soleil aerialist Aloysia Gavre. She was a Pilates coach with the famed Canadian circus and was in charge of helping the performers stay strong and fit and recover from injury. Gavre says that her school can help anyone willing to work to get in shape and to have fun.
Cirque School offers incredibly comprehensive programming. That way it kind of fits with whatever person walks in the door, their personality, their musculature, whatever it is that they're drawn to. So whether or not it's aerial arts or contortion or hand balancing, and each segment of the circus arts works on a different portion of their body.
Perhaps you've always wanted to learn to fly on a trapeze, or maybe you'd like to be an aerialist hanging from silken lines. Or maybe hand balancing or contortion sparks your interest. Aloysia Gavre says that her Cirque School can help you reach that goal.
And the other thing about it is that it's also working your brain, creating all these geometric patterns that you have to remember how to utilize your body and your skills. So it's the brain and the musculature that are working and fusing together.
The instructors are working circus professionals who guide students in every exercise. Kelly Maglia, a costume designer from West Hollywood, is one of those students.
I always want to be here because I love the different variety of activities I can do that challenge both my strength, flexibility, and endurance, which is unusual. You know, there's other places you can go train in the various apparatus, but there's nowhere else that I know of that has pole, contortion, all the aerial apparatus. I do straps as well so that I could really build up strength.
54-year-old computer business analyst Bob Dean of West Hollywood says that Cirque School offers a much more interesting workout than he found at a traditional gym.
It's a great workout. It's very challenging. You get to do things, and it's fun also because you get to, like, accomplish things. It's more than just, you know, lifting a weight here and there. It's you actually get to learn how to do skills. And so you feel like you've accomplished something as well as getting a really good workout.
Though it's a lot of fun, physical therapy specialist Dr. Slava Shute says that, as with any workout, people doing Cirque School need to pay attention to their instructors and visit their doctor.
Most people are not usually accustomed to do these movements. So it's very, very important to do these things properly and to consult your Cirque fitness professional with technique to do things safely.
And while staying safe, you might get to learn to fly on a trapeze. In Washington, I'm David Byrd.
We would like to invite you to follow us on Twitter. You can find us at @VOA_IE. If you would like to listen to today's program again or any previous broadcast, please visit our website at voanews.com. Go to the Programs tab in the upper right-hand corner, then scroll down to International Edition. Thanks for joining us.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
In 2015, terrorism continued to bedevil significant portions of the African continent. In East Africa, the Somalia-based terrorist group Al-Shabaab continued launching attacks and suicide bombings in Somalia, frequently targeting Mogadishu International Airport, Somali government facilities and hotels popular with government officials and business people. The terror group also set its sights on Kenya. In the Lake Chad Basin region, Boko Haram continues its attacks in northeastern Nigeria, Cameroon, Chad, and Niger. In West Africa and the Sahel, terrorist groups have conducted attacks against hotels and a resort frequented by Westerners. In 2015, one of the key developments in the global fight against terrorism has been the increased level of international cooperation and coordination in addressing cross-border and regional terrorist activity. So, for example, the Lake Chad Basin countries formed the Multinational Joint Task Force to confront Boko Haram, while the Horn of Africa nations are coordinating their efforts against Al-Shabaab in Somalia. The United States is deeply involved in assisting its partners in their efforts to degrade and dismantle these terrorist threats. The U.S., in partnership with Somali forces, supports African Union forces in maintaining pressure on Al-Shabaab and weakening the group's territorial control in parts of Somalia. In North Africa, the United States helps support the Trans-Saharan Counterterrorism Partnership. Through this program, we have been working with Algeria, Burkina Faso, Cameroon, Chad, Mali, Mauritania, Morocco, Niger, Nigeria, Senegal, and Tunis to build the capacity and cooperation of military, law enforcement, and civilian actors across North and West Africa to counter terrorism. The Partnership for Regional East Africa Counterterrorism is a U.S.-funded and implemented counterterrorism partnership that includes Djibouti, Ethiopia, Kenya, Somalia, Tanzania, as well as Uganda, Burundi, Comoros, Rwanda, Seychelles, South Sudan, and Sudan. We are expanding engagement with African governmental and non-governmental partners to better understand the drivers of violent extremism and design effective responses, said Assistant Secretary of State for African Affairs Linda Thomas-Greenfield. The United States is committed to partnering with the people and governments of Africa to promote democracy, peace, and prosperity.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.